Welcome to A Quest for Wholeness podcast. I'm your host, Lexi Burt, a fertility advisor and endometriosis advocate. Together, we're diving into the journey of understanding what it truly means to be a healthy, complete individual, biologically, psychologically, socially, and spiritually. In solo episodes, I'll share my insights on fertility, holistic health, and endometriosis. Plus, we'll have conversations with incredible guests, all exploring the same burning question: what does it mean to be a whole, healthy, and satisfied person? I'm so grateful you're here. Today, our conversation is more than just money or business. It's about how we relate to worth, confidence, and the way that we live our lives. I'm so honored to have Stacey Owen on my podcast. She's a serial entrepreneur, money mindset, a business coach, founder of Hey Silly Rebel, certified in sacred money archetypes. She helps ambitious women and silly rebels do life and business differently and rebuilt her business after burnout. Now, enjoyment, alignment, and fun come first. And honestly, whether you're building a business or just trying to feel better about your bank account, this episode is for you. I like to jump right in, no nonsense, get to the good stuff with podcast episodes, Stacey. So in your simplest terms, tell us what money mindset is.
Ooh, so money mindset to me, it encompasses your emotions, beliefs, and your patterns or habits around money. And a lot of the times those patterns, habits, beliefs are unconscious. Like you haven't actually thought about them, you just have them. Because your money mindset also makes up your money story. So it's those things that I mentioned, but also plus the way that you were raised, conditioning, society, experiences maybe that you've had to all encompass your money mindset.
Okay, so you said something about a money story. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Everybody has a money story. Even if you're good at money, that doesn't mean you don't have a money story. If you're bad at money, if you're good at money, doesn't even like matter what level you are at or how much you're making. We all have this. And it is what we believe about money in our lives. So a couple little tidbits, you know, I could use as an example where women can struggle, especially women, would be something like that person can make that kind of money, but I can't. Or that person is knowledgeable enough in order to have the successful business and be able to offer the service and actually charge for it, but I'm not smart enough, or I don't have enough, or like what makes me, I'm not special and this other person special. So that could be a money story that you're telling yourself, because how you do money is how you do everything. So it's not just money, it's the way that you value you and your time and energy as well.
So I guess, how does this show up in people's daily lives? You know, whether they run a business or not, you said money is how we do everything. So can you give us an example of how these money stories might appear in daily life?
So what we should probably talk about first, and this will help articulate that, is the way that I look at it is we use the sacred money archetypes. So there are 8 different archetypes, and they're based on your values. So let's say one of your archetypes might be an accumulator. And an accumulator, they have actually a very close relationship with money, but they can operate from a place of scarcity or that there's not enough, even when they do have enough. And there's always this fear of lack. And they want the money. I mean, we all want the money, but they want it in a way that is closer to them than actually the other archetypes, which is really interesting. So that might come out in a way where they will only make a purchase or even invest in themselves or in their business if they know all of the details, and they need to know that the ROI is high, that they're going to get something out of it. Is this item or thing or service that I'm buying, is it of value enough? And then the other flip side is, is it worth it enough for me, right? So it's about the money, but it's also about them, right? Like, do they have enough value in themselves that they will see this investment as a worthwhile investment, right? Mm. So even though they can have a really close relationship with money and they love saving money, they can have a hard time spending, and it can actually take them a really long time to make a decision. It can be very stressful for them.
Okay. So, I mean, even down to the simplest of purchases, maybe even just things that you actually need, self-care wise. So that could be maybe a challenging or even distressing, maybe is a good word to use, decision when buying things for yourself. Is that like an example?
Yeah, but absolutely. So there, I feel like there's an unlimited number of examples that we could do, but that's a really good one. I think that's common also for women. And I wonder if you might have accumulator in your top three, because this is a very accumulator type question. So yes, I think that, yeah, I mean, just repeat that one last bit, because my mind is definitely going further into different examples, but ask me specifically what you just asked.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, okay, yeah, transparently, for me, I have a hard time, like, I know I like to use expensive shampoo, right? Because okay, it makes my hair feel good. It makes me feel good about the way that I look. But like, I have a hard time biting the bullet. And I'm like, well, I don't need it. I probably like could use something else. So simple, or what should be simple decision making for things like that, actually become almost distressing to me.
Okay, so with that, you get to decide if you are okay with that or not. So let's just use the accumulator as an example. If you're, let's say, frugal with money, that's not actually a bad thing. It's not a bad quality. So all of the archetypes have qualities. And if they're overused, that's when it can become unhealthy or trip you up. Like if right. it's a quality, if it's a value of yours to be careful with your money and to say like this beautiful luxury shampoo, I mean, that sounds really nice, but I don't really need it. So I'm going to get this. And you get to decide if you're operating from a healthy or unhealthy place there. And if that makes you feel good, then you know what? That means you're operating from a healthy place. And that's awesome. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But when it becomes unhealthy is if it starts tripping up in a way where it makes you feel guilty or shame or bad in any way. And a decision like that shouldn't make you feel those emotions. And then you need to ask yourself why.
Okay. So there's so many good things I want to dive into about the money archetypes, but we had talked a little bit about like the money stories and that we all have one. And I mean, I can think of the numerous way these are developed, but what is the kind of the core or like significant events that happen in people's lives that influence their money story?
Definitely how you've been raised. You know, if you're raised in like, you know, working class and it's hard to make money, and if you earn just enough and you're working hard, then maybe it means you're honorable. And maybe in your environment, you were told that people with money aren't good people. You can't trust people with money. They're not nice people, people that have money. And if someone's charging you something, that means they're a bad person in some way. So if you have this belief since childhood that people with money aren't good, and you go out in the world and you try and make money, are you going to have this weird guilty shame feeling when you're trying to accept money into your life? Probably. And is it your belief, or is that someone else's belief? Is that your parents' beliefs? Or could be, you know, even religious beliefs, right? And again, if you're happy with those beliefs that you have and they're helping you in your life and you feel good about it, then that's great.
Right.
But you get to decide if it's helping you or not. And you get to decide if you're okay with that.
Well, and I think this is just such a great moment that, and you kind of talked about like the way that you're raised, your religious beliefs, your cultural beliefs all play into these things. And that isn't just money. That influences our whole worldview, right? And self-perception as well. And I think we don't talk a lot about emotions and money. I think it's uncomfortable for people. I think there's like this taboo-ness about it still, even. But people who are doing work like you are, and especially with people who are trying to be open to receiving money and are doing good in the world, but still have these blocks for them, it's important to address that. But I wonder, maybe this is a good moment for listeners, if you can stop and ask yourself, when was the last time you felt guilt or fear around money? And what did that moment teach you? Or even if you gave yourself a moment to feel that, because it's really easy to shove that down and move on with your day.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I always tell people to just be aware of it and curious. And even if you're replaying a habit or a situation or a conversation or reaction, and you notice it happening, don't even fight it. Just let it happen and just notice it all the way through and be curious about it and be kind to yourself. Be compassionate. Like, don't penalize yourself. That's the last thing that you need. It's not going to help you at all. Just be curious and decide, what is this helpful, or is this tripping me up in some way? So a really great example of this too is, let's say, and I've seen this firsthand, and I've experienced this as also, this is like one of my money stories, is when you're having success and you are making money and your business is growing and, you know, you're becoming knowledge in your peer group, whatever it is. What I see is a lot of women that will downplay themselves. And when people ask them how things are going, their go-to is to tell them how hard they're working, you know, that they should have more work-life balance, that they, you know, are struggling in some way because they don't want to be too successful and they don't want to play themselves up too much and be, they need to stay humble. They need to be in that struggle zone. So they're still relatable to their friends and to the intimate relationships that they have. So instead of feeling the freedom to express like how much they're loving their work and how much, you know, they're just enjoying their lives or how much money they're making or how successful they are, they have to, in some way, it's like instinctual to make it a struggle, to make it negative in some way, that they're working so hard and that's bad. And is it, are they actually, or are you putting this block so you're not too successful so you can still be relatable to your circle? Because, you know, survival is like, hey, don't be outside the pack. You got to stay with the pack to survive, right? And to feel safe. And it's really scary to step outside that.
Well, and especially if that's an ingrained pattern, like if you've struggled and grinded all of the time for your whole entire life, that's going to be a pretty uncomfortable experience to maybe be like confronted with success, which sounds crazy, right? Because doesn't everyone want to be successful? But then when it happens, then these kind of patterns start to emerge.
But even before then, so consider this. So maybe you are making things harder than they need to be. Maybe what would actually be easier in your business and to be successful, you're noticing it and then turning it away is not even an option, because easy does not equal success. Making money is not easy. Making money should be hard. And if it's not hard, if it's easy, then are you doing something wrong? Do you feel like, is that somehow not right? Is that not moral if it's too easy? So I'm going to decide to do it the hard way.
Interesting. Okay, so I think this brings us nicely into the sacred money archetypes, because you said there are 8. So maybe you could just tell us, yeah, quickly what those are.
Okay, so we have the...
Maybe not so quickly, but yeah, like you could go off.
Yeah, I mean, they're all on my Instagram too, if you guys want like a little overview, a little bit more in depth on them, but they are 8. So there's the ruler, maverick, nurturer, accumulator, alchemist, romantic, connector, and celebrity. So what I like to do is I like looking at the top 3 archetypes because it tells you a fuller picture. So usually someone that's done self-development work before, their primary archetype is usually operating from a fairly healthy place. And then you'll see some of the attributes that are being overused in the other archetypes, like your second or your third, and then things will be popping up there. Or maybe, you know, you're operating from a fairly healthy place in your business because you've been really focusing on self-development in that way. But if you're in your personal life, maybe that same quality now is not operating so healthy, or vice versa, or in your business or in the career that you're working in. So I always find it really fascinating and hearing people's stories and what's coming up for them. And then I like looking at also what comes last for their values. And that also tells you a lot. It tells you absolutely a lot about a person.
Interesting. Okay. So give us maybe a brief little description of each archetype.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I have ruler for 1. That's a very ruler thing to be 1. I love that that's the one I wrote down first. So rulers, they get shit done. It's not just for them, but also for the people around them. They're really cool because they can be very focused, very driven. They can be perfectionists. Sometimes also, if they're operating from an unhealthy place, a ruler can feel like their value comes from efficiency or their value comes from productivity. And they can have a really hard time balancing that in their personal life, and they can be overworkers. But rulers are phenomenal and they're incredible leaders. And then next up we have mavericks. So mavericks like doing things their own way. They're very creative. They will come up with solutions that other people just will never see. And people are very attracted to mavericks. They have this magnetic energy, but because they want to do things their own way, They can make things a lot harder than it needs to be. And when they're no longer feeling creative or creative flow, even though something's working really well and they're bored, they'll just blow shit up. That's not so great. They're high risk. They'll take high risk for high reward. And they can be a little bit riskier with money, but they're very good at the money game. I have to say, too, like with rulers are actually pretty balanced when it comes to money and investments. And they're usually making pretty smart moves with money. Nurturers is the inner sponsor. And this is my number one. My number one's nurturer. And I was like, ah, shit. So if you do your quiz and that is your response to your archetype, that is a clear sign you're operating in some way from an unhealthy place. if you have any negative feeling at all, and we can talk more about that. But nurturers, they really truly find joy in helping other people be successful and supporting other people. So they can be very giving of their time and energy. They're not judgmental at all. But obviously those qualities, as amazing as they are, if they're overused, it can put a nurturer into a really bad position where they're not taking care of themselves, whether it's their energy and time or even financially, because they're giving it away to other people.
Okay, that would be pretty significant. And as women, right, we have the natural tendency to nurture. And I mean, given your life experience too, that might be kind of the natural gravitational pull to overextend oneself.
Yeah, and men can be just as common nurturers as women.
Okay.
And I would say, yeah, so the most common archetype that I've seen from women who are attracted to me, the ones that are coming to me, are actually accumulators. I get accumulators, mavericks, and rulers.
That makes sense for your demographic, right? Like people who want to do things differently,
yeah,
who are ambitious, high achieving. Okay, that checks out.
Yeah. So it's all very interesting. But probably the bottom two that I see would be romantics and celebrities.
Shocker. Yeah. Those are actually my lowest two. Is romantic and celebrity. Yes. So of course, if people haven't already taken this, there's a free Sacred Money Archetypes quiz where you can find out your list of where you fall in the sacred money archetypes. So yeah, romantic is dead last for me and celebrity is second last. And before we started recording, you said you were so excited to share about the romantic, and I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
Okay, I am gonna dig right into that. Girl, we have so much to talk about. Okay, tell me your top three.
Okay, my top three is ruler. That's the one that I was like, shit. I was like, yeah. So there's a sign there. My second one, accumulator. And my third is nurturer.
Ah, yes. Love it. So interesting. Ooh, see, I could weave a story for you right now. So the romantic. So this one makes me sad that so few women have this one, because it's all about the joys in life and ease and flow. And it's about beautiful experiences and pleasures. You know, it could be like going out for food. It could be travel. It could be just spending time. And, you know, us like, so rulers in my top three too. And, you know, a lot of rulers are like really ambitious workers, humans. We just like lose this part of ourselves. And to take that time for that joy and pleasure and ease and flow, like it is actually painful. It can be painful in your body, and we can, touch on nervous system. But the romantics, they're all about that. And I think there's just so incredible, and there's this incredible energy to be around. Where a romantic can get tripped up though is, you know, when they buy things and then when they shouldn't be, and but they tell themselves they deserve it. Sometimes they can tie their purchases and how they spend money to their value and to their worth, their self-worth. And if they're not able to buy this thing, does that make them feel unworthy? So they buy it anyway, even if they shouldn't. So something to watch out for romantic. I get more men that are romantics than women. I'm like, ah, come on, ladies.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, and celebrity. And that's a really common one that when people have it, they feel shame, because to them it's this negative thing. Like, if I'm a celebrity, does that mean I'm shallow? Right? Does that mean I'm not a nice person? Does that mean I'm not a nurturing person? that mean I'm not about relationships? Does that mean I have this massive ego? And isn't that interesting that someone would have those thoughts about a celebrity? And then what is it? So if that's a big part of who they are and their values, what are they saying about themselves? Right? In the reality, a celebrity is also that magnetic human that walks into the room and everybody notices, and that has such, they're such leaders, they have such power, they're amazing. And I wish more celebrities, when I've engaged with them, just felt that pride, because not only are they good at being in the spotlight, they're amazing at helping other people be spotlighted too. They're incredible leaders. And so, of course, like, you know, you could probably guess what some of these qualities, you know, a celebrity might have that could trip them up is maybe buying things, not when they shouldn't, but buying things maybe for the wrong reasons. So like if you want to buy this outfit or this beautiful luxe shampoo, right, which would actually be like a very romantic celeb thing to do, and if you're buying it because it makes you feel good, and then when you feel good and you look good, you do good work, then that's amazing. And then that's a great quality. But maybe if you're buying the shampoo because you think you should show it off and it's going to, you know, make people accept you more, or like you need to wear this designer because people are going to take you, designer, you know, label, then people are going to take you more seriously or accept you more into their world. And then is that a healthy thing? And do you like that? Do you get to decide yes or no?
All these things are just reminding me, because my undergrad's in psychology, and I've just always loved, you know, psychology. And I remember even being a young kid and we were driving the truck and be like, well, how does everyone see the same color red? Like, how do we collectively agree that red is all red? And maybe I was like 10. So it made sense that I ended up studying psychology for my undergrad. But all of this is just making me think of like mental health diagnostic criteria, actually, because people can have, you know, like, let's use anxiety, for example. I think anxiety can sometimes be a superpower, but when it starts to become distressing to you, that's when it becomes an issue. And that's what I'm kind of hearing you say within all of these things, is they're not necessarily good or bad, but they can be helpful or, you know, sometimes hindering is actually what I'm hearing.
Exactly. And it's kind of like parts work. And I'm sure you've heard of that. So that's how I really treat the sacred money archetypes, are like parts of you,
right?
So maybe, you know, you have ruler, accumulator, nurturer. So a ruler, you know, really is about like get shit done. They're very driven. I'm not just for them, but they want to make an impact in the world as well. An accumulator after ruler would be like, okay, you have this drive and this ambition, but you have to do it like really smart and probably like very, oh, don't spend too much money. We're a little bit scared. And your nurturer, if it's operating from an unhealthy place, could look like, you know, doing things for free, could look like giving your time and energy away, you know, making sure everybody else is taken care of. And your ruler's up front being like, yeah, but we're building an empire. And then your other two might be, you know, might be like holding you back in some way. Or on the flip side, you know, your ruler could be like, yeah, we're getting shit done. And your accumulator's like, okay, great. Like, we're going to make a budget. We're going to make a plan. And like, we find deep joy in saving money. And we're going to support you in this journey. And the nurturer, you know, it's also about taking care of yourself, right? So how, maybe in some way, if your ruler is overworking, if that's something that you're experiencing, you could ask yourself, okay, ruler, what do you need right now? And what part of me can support you? So your top three, I would look at, okay, hey, nurturer, that's in you too. It's in you already. How can your nurturer side right now support your ruler?
Ah, I love that. I love that, because I think with self-development or even people who are aware of these things, there's always so much maybe temptation to like use things on the outside. Like I need to get something else to help me. Maybe it's a coach, maybe it's a counselor. And look, those things I think are all needed and can be very helpful for people in self-development. But we actually have so much strength, inner strength and skills within us. So I just love that you brought that up. That piece is there. And yeah. How can you harness that part of you to maybe help out and support the part that's working too hard almost right now?
Yes. And that, absolutely. Exactly that. It is already in you. And so the archetypes, you can use it in a way to articulate what you're already feeling or experiencing. maybe consciously you're aware of these things, or when you see your results and you read about them or learn about them, you're like, oh my God, that's what's happening. Like, that's why I'm feeling like this. I was feeling all these things. I don't know what was wrong with me. Am I bipolar? I don't even know. Like, then you're like, okay, that's what it is. Okay, I know. Now I'm aware. And what can I do about it?
I think it's so funny because if I have any friends or family listening to this, like, they'll be like, oh yeah, Lexi, that makes sense to a T. I actually had to fill out some questions for this little social media post for the nonprofit that I'm a part of. And it was like, what would your like close friends say about you? And I was like, well, if I'm completely honest, they'd say I work too hard and I'm bossy, you know, like that's what it would be.
So this is, if we were doing a session, I would say, then how does that make you feel that you work too hard and that you're bossy? And is that their perception? And do you take on their beliefs or do you believe that as well? And if you do, is it true or is it actually different? And a lot of times when someone says, oh, you work too much, and you respond, oh, no. Okay, are you responding that way because you want to somehow make them feel comfortable? Or if you responded, I'm working a lot, but it's fueling me and I'm feeling driven and I'm so excited with what I'm creating. If you were to respond that way, because maybe that's true, maybe you are working a lot, but maybe something else is also true, then when you say that to them, you're basically telling them your experience instead of allowing them to tell you your experience, and you're just agreeing with it because you're trying to still be a part of, you know, your inner circle. You want everyone to feel comfortable.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, that just happened recently for me. And I didn't feel good about it because I was like, yeah, I know, but like, it's all really exciting things. But even when I walked away from that conversation, it didn't feel good to me because I felt like I was just being agreeable for the safety to be accepted and like make other people feel comfortable, where, you know, there's very few people in my life right now who are like pursuing the kind of things that I am or exploring that way. And I totally respect people's decisions to like do whatever they want. That's what you get to do. That's what this is about, doing whatever the hell you want.
Yes. Yeah.
But when you're doing something different than the group, oh no. Yeah, I am working too hard. What can I say? You know, but then that doesn't land well either.
No. Yeah. It doesn't feel good in your body. And do you feel like guilty, you know?
Yeah.
Or yeah. Like maybe you don't feel seen either. And if this is like acquaintance, okay, that's one thing. But if it's someone close to you, but it's up to us also, right? To state who we are, how we're feeling, what our dreams are, you know, what you're good with. We can only control ourselves.
So I guess, why is money so emotional? Like, especially for women or high achievers, this holds a lot. Even what we're talking about now, like I can feel it in my body. Where does this come from?
Okay, my mom, when she got married, she went from having her own bank account to now only being able to have one if her husband co-signed. That wasn't that long ago. So just like tip of the iceberg statement there. Especially for women, how long have we been told that we're not good with money, that, you know, our partners or men, other people handle it? We didn't even have do it without our husbands if you were married.
Right.
How many, 30 years ago? 30 years ago. A lot of culture, society, conditioning has taught us to be a little bit afraid of money.
So we've kind of talked about, you know, being aware of it, leading with curiosity, not judgment, and letting that, just feeling it through the experience. But, you know, awareness is one thing. Like, awareness is great and it's needed. But like, what do we do next if we realize this pattern is maladaptive, that it's kind of even hurting us in personal or business? And I mean, honestly, and I don't know if you agree with this, I would love to hear your thoughts. I think that your personal values are your business values. I think when you're leading from a soul-led place, it's hard to detach those two and potentially even impossible. What are your thoughts on that?
Layered question. We also didn't go through some of the other archetypes, so we can go through those later if you want, or people can, I have their all the information on my Instagram too. But with that one, I would say your personal values, especially as a solopreneur, are absolutely very closely tied to your business. Now, if you had a larger corporation and a large team, it is tied, yes, but there are also other ones that may not be your personal values that are your business and culture values, which you will agree with, but they might not be your core ones or primary ones, right? So for an example, someone that has a really, you know, that like really religious, and they have a core value around, let's say, you know, Buddhism, Christianity, whatever it is, and they have 250 people on their team, is that going to be part of their company? Yes or no?
Probably not.
Probably not. That's a pretty core value.
Right.
So when you have multiple people, now you have to have some business and culture values that might not exactly be your own, but again, that you agree with. And then it's about taking those values, whether you're a solopreneur or you have a large team, and articulating them in a way that your client experiences that value in a way that means something to them, right? So let's say I have the value of freedom. My value is freedom. And what that means to me is going to be different than, you know, maybe one of my clients. So let's say I operate my business, I structure in a way where it allows me to have free time when I want it, like we talked about, I think, before we started recording. And to my client, that might look like I'm giving them the permission to do the same, but it might not look like how I do it.
Right.
Right. So depending on what you're offering to your client, yes and no, same values.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, you're right. We kind of skipped over, in excitement of talking about the other archetypes, a few. So pick us up where we left off.
I think we
last talked about celebrity.
Celebrity. Did we talk in detail about the accumulator? Or did we just touch on it?
I think we just touched on it.
Okay. So the accumulator is the inner banker. And we talked about the beginning more. Definitely. Hey, friends, come hang out with us. Have we had beers yet? No. Will we later? Probably. But the accumulator is the inner banker. I'll just go through it really quick just in case. Accumulators, they need all the details. Like they buy based on fact, not feeling. So interesting. So your ruler and accumulator would purchase based on details and like, this is going to get me what I want and this is a value X, Y, Z. But let's say, you know, an alchemist, nurturer, a romantic will base, a maverick even will buy based on vibe. So you know, a maverick will look at a product and be like, hey, does this make me feel excited? Does, I'm going to buy that. And an accumulator will look at it. Does this make sense? What am I getting? Is this a smart decision? Yes or no? Okay, I'm going to ask three more questions and now I'm going to buy it.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. And then we have the alchemist is super cool. So an alchemist, it's all about like transformation. An alchemist are the idealists. Like they believe that there's an unfair balance of wealth in the world. I mean, really, like, who doesn't believe that? But they believe in such a deep way where they might actually go as far as believing money is evil. So even though an alchemist will want to make money, they'll want to make money for the things that are important to them. Usually it's like a larger cause, their community, and make the world a better place. A lot of alchemists go into like healing, you know, energy work, spiritual work, you know, even like veterinarians, like they're like very caring about like a larger scale. And if you have a belief that money is evil, then I can guarantee you, if you're operating from an unhealthy place, you're literally turning money away. You're downplaying yourself. You're not making it easy for people to give you money. And when you make it, you give it away as fast as possible. Alchemists are also idea generators, like a maverick, very, very good coming up with ideas, and they can attract money in unusual ways, which is fascinating. The last one is the connector, and it's like the cousin, or even like the sister to the nurturer. And connectors are really excellent at connection and like building relationships and they can go into any room and make a connection with someone. But what they have a hard time with is actually asking for the money, right? So, or asking for what they want. And a lot of times connectors, because they're all about relationships, they will let someone else make a decision about how much money they should be making, right? They won't ask for the raise. They don't even want to look at the money if they're operating from an unhealthy place. And they want someone else just to deal with it for them. So they might actually be giving away a lot of their power when it comes to money and even maybe decisions and structure around their life. So if it's operating from a healthy place, you know, if a connector is operating from a healthy place, that could look like not loving looking at their money. So they hire a professional that takes care of it for them and that feels good to them. Or they rely on someone else, like say a partner, to take care of the money, and that, and they feel a little bit of shame around that. And they feel a bit disempowered because they don't feel like they're smart enough to figure it out themselves. And if that's the case, then you're probably operating from an unhealthy place and that doesn't feel good. So again, like that's where you get to decide, does that feel good or not, right? But connectors are very cool humans.
Well, I feel like even with all of these things, and again, even I find myself, and I said, falling into to that temptation of that external, like finding something external to explain something. And what I'm hearing again throughout this whole thing is like each archetype, there's kind of a spectrum, again, maladaptive to adaptive. Mm-hmm. And you really need to feel out where on that spectrum you are, and you get to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
How, because I'm sure this comes up in the work that you do, is it a challenge for people to actually accept where they are in that spectrum for each archetype?
It depends on the person. So some people, when they find out their archetypes, especially their primary, in their top three, especially their primary, and the response is, shit. Right? That can feel like a bit heavy. It can feel like a lot of resistance and a little bit like, I know, but also, right? Mm. And that's kind of our way, our mind of like keeping you safe and keeping you repeating patterns because it's familiar and that's safer than the unknown. So by the time people get to me, I feel like they're aware that they're meant for more, right? They're aware that things could be easier. They're aware that they could be operating in their life or their work in a more aligned way. And the shifts usually happen fairly quickly, but then I find there's always one little piece that comes out that is this ultra resistance that you have. And I will see it in their body, in their response, in defensiveness. And that's okay. Like that's a part of it. And we all have it in some way. And it's just about looking at that and saying, okay, like what's happening for you right now? Why, what are you feeling? What does that mean for you? And where did that come from? I had a session yesterday where I sensed this like resistance, and it literally went back to her stepfather telling her as a child that children don't deserve anything and that they have to earn it. So yes. So she is an alchemist nurturer, her top two. And for an alchemist nurturer, actually alchemist nurturer celebrity, which is like the coolest mix ever, it was so damaging because she's all about giving. Mm-hmm. Both of those are very giving. And then to be told that you don't deserve to receive. And for that connection to happen, if that's how she's been living her life and that expectation for, yeah. And it's not from her. It came from a very, you know, trusted outside source, someone that was supposed to take care of her. And that, it's hard, like it guts you a little bit when you learn that and you realize where it comes from. But then once you see it and you can feel that, like you can look at, like for her, like looking at her alchemist nurture and being like, hey, I see you there. You're okay. I got you now. Right? We're going to choose something different.
Wow. That's really powerful. And I think that's what you were saying, that that parts theory. And if people don't know about this is just kind of one kind of branch of counseling work where there's these different parts of yourself, and maybe they developed at different milestones or different ages, and they might even still be that age. They might be that little 8-year-old girl who was told that she actually doesn't deserve anything. She has to work for it. So going back there, like, this is pretty profound work you're doing. And when we think about money, it's so separate from this stuff. But if this is where the roots are coming from, that is huge.
It's so connected. It's wild, because money is a tool and money is energy. So it, and it's fuel. So for this person, for example, by turning money away, which she was, it's because she believed that she really had to earn it. So it had to be hard, even though she was giving so much of herself. But if now you look at money, instead of like this, especially as an alchemist, like, money is greedy, right? Versus money is fuel and it's energy and it's fueling me in order to give back. And it's that full circle energy. Well, now that's different.
Okay, well, tell me a little bit about this, Stacey, because you said a lot of people, this is kind of like an unconscious thing. Like, you use the term turning away money, and people listening might be like, girl, I'm not turning away money. I want money, but it's just, it's not coming to me. How do you explain this? Or like, how does this come up in that unconscious way where people are energetically turning away money?
Yeah. So, I mean, one I kind of touched on before, and I'll give you another example of this, is downplaying yourself. Someone says, like, you know, like, you got to go see Lexi for this. Like, she's the best. She's amazing. They come to you. Like, I've heard all this great stuff. You're like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm pretty good. Oh, that's so nice. They said that about me. You know, I'm just like doing my work here. And the person will look at you and be like, oh, are they confident in themselves? Because if they're not confident and they seem a little uncertain, then I'm a little uncertain now. Right? Like, a lot, like, and women will do it. People will do this. Women will do this for sure. They'll downplay our skills, our capabilities, you know, right? So you're turning, even though you want it, you don't want to look greedy. You don't want to look pushy, right? Or bossy or salesy, right? So you'll just be super ultra casual. And that can even lean into, hey, I want to book you. And your response is, oh, awesome. Send me an email. You can find the link on my website. And you just, because you're afraid of coming across a sort of pushy, bossy, whatever those things are, right? Overconfident. Instead of saying like, hey, cool, like, how's next Tuesday looking for you? Or I'm booking 3 weeks in advance. You want to snag a spot now? Let's look at this together. And even though you want that booking, you're hoping they'll just come to you because that will feel better.
Right. Okay. That's a good example. That's a good example. So really, it's about finding that ground in yourself, though, to be able to show up in those instances where you, then you aren't turning money away. But that can be hard.
Yeah.
Find that.
Yeah. Or here's this is a very common one, especially with newer entrepreneurs, is someone wants to book you and before you even tell them the full price, you want to offer them a discount. You're like, normally it's $500, but for you today, it's 50% off. Does that sound good? Literally pushing money away. And this person, they're in a call with you or they're meeting with you and they want to hire you.
Yeah.
And now you just made it weird.
Yeah, because, okay, well, what message is that sending?
You're insecure in whatever it is that you're offering, and you're insecure in yourself. So even when you look, this is a great question I love to ask people. When you look at your pricing, what does your pricing say? What does it say? You're like, so this is a great example. I had a photographer that wants to be a high-end luxury photographer, right? And I looked at their pricing, their packaging, and I said to them, does this align with your brand experience and how you want people to view you? What does your pricing say?
Oof. Oof.
And if you want to be, like, you know, a budget-friendly and accessible photographer, then that's amazing. And choose that. And that feels good to you. And be that. That's amazing. But if you're saying, I want to be a high-end photographer and you're charging budget prices, there's such a disconnect there energetically. And literally, that's you being afraid and actually pushing money away because you're, there are so many reasons we could dig into that. That could be the case. And depending on your archetype and your values and some of your history, right? Like, that's where the sessions really, the details really come out. And it's so unique for each person. It's fascinating.
Oh, it is fascinating. And, you know, just talking about finding that even keel ground and like that confidence to like show up the way that you want to. I have a prompt for listeners. If you didn't care about what anyone thought, you would do what? So if I didn't care about what anyone thought, I would blank. Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, in this conversation, specifically because I have been working a lot on so many fun, cool, exciting projects that are just enlightening, I would, without shame, share that. What about you, Stacey? If you didn't care what anyone thought, you would.
I'm already doing it.
Oh, that's the right answer. There was a right answer, and that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Amazing and terrifying and amazing. Welcome to the club.
I love it. I love it. Okay. We have so much to learn and aspire to. So I guess, Stacey, what was your relationship with money growing up?
Mine was definitely men handled the money. And so if you guys are curious, my top one is Nurture, but right after that is Maverick Ruler. And I'm back to back. And I really identify with Maverick Ruler, and it hurt to see that Nurture was way high up. It was the first one. And like, I get it. It makes so much sense. So I can see how some of my Nurture qualities have been operating from an unhealthy place because of the way that I was raised. And it was, you know, like, always be pleasant, don't rock the boat, you know, very giving, very nurturing, you know, all those, like, what makes for a good girl, what makes for a good woman, what makes for a good partner. And I can see that absolutely how that translated into my relationships and directly into my relationship with money, because that's what it is. What you have with money or how you feel about it, it is just treated like a relationship. So if you were in a relationship with money right now, how would you define that relationship? You know, like, let's say a connector, like, you're ignoring it. Is that a very healthy relationship? Is money going to want to stick around in that relationship if you're ignoring it? Are you telling it it's evil and you're pushing it away? Right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
No. So how did you get to this area of work after years as kind of a multi-business entrepreneur?
So I took it as a student. I don't know. How did I come across? Oh, I read a book. And it was called Get Rich, Lucky Bitch by Denise Duffield Thomas. And I was obsessed. I fell in love with it. It, like, opened up my eyes to so much. And then she is certified in sacred money archetypes too. So I took her program and it blew my mind. Like, it literally gutted me. It gutted me. It built me back up and it taught me a lot. And this was, I keep saying 2 years ago, but I've been saying 2 years ago for like a year now. So it's probably like closer to 3 years. And I had my best year ever as an entrepreneur last year because of what I learned and the work that I've done and what I've implemented, not just as an individual and a person in my personal life, but also in my career and my entrepreneurship and my business life, even structures and, oh my gosh, so many things. So it changed so much for me that last year I went and got certified. So Kendall Summerhawk, as she's the creator of the Sacred Money Archetypes and also my mentor, and she created this, and I'm so grateful because it literally changed my life.
Wow. Wow. And I can see why. Like, this is pretty powerful stuff you're working with here.
It's fun.
Right? So fun. Like, so fun.
Right. So this is the thing. That this work doesn't have to be so heavy. Like, it can be, but it's approachable. It's not shaming. It's not penalizing you. It's not telling you need to be fixed. It's saying all parts of you are amazing.
Yes.
All parts of you are amazing. And let's embrace these parts in a healthy way that make you feel good and support the life that you want to build. And they're fun because archetypes.
Yeah, amazing. Oh, I love it. I love it. So as we're wrapping up, I have a lightning round for you, okay? What is the archetype you resisted most?
Nurture.
How do you embrace it now?
By nurturing myself.
Ooh, good one. What is one mantra that keeps you grounded?
I serve, so I deserve.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. What's your coffee order?
Trad Cat.
One book or tool that changed the way you think about money? You already said it.
Yeah, Denise Duffield Thomas, Get Rich, Lucky Bitch. But I would say about money, but even before that, before I knew it was about money, is actually Jim Sincero, You Are a Badass.
Okay, amazing. I will link all of those in the show notes for people who are listening and want to check it out. Obviously, just another plug for Stacey's Sacred Archetype Quiz, because honestly, that's where I got my answers from that we talked about. And you can go back and use this episode to listen a little bit more about your results. And if people want to work with you, Stacey, have questions, comments, concerns, how can they reach you?
Right now, everything's on Instagram. One place, simplicity. That is my motto. So it's at Hey Stacey Owen.
Easy as pie. I will also link that in the show notes for listeners. And I think we're all so grateful for your time today, Stacey. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Lexi. You're awesome.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you feel inspired and empowered to embrace your whole self in mind, body, and spirit. If you're ready to take the next step in understanding your fertility or women's health needs, I would love to support you. Book a free consult with me, and together we'll explore how we can work towards your healthiest, most vibrant self. Until next time, take care.